Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome again, my friends. I am Vivian McPeak, and this is Hemp Present. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. Robert Shields received his natural resource management education in Vermont, and he has had a professional career in renewables and green building. The last decade spent on the front line of a rapidly changing planet in Fairbanks, Alaska, has prepared him for what comes next for us all. Robert is a champion of permaculture as the foundation of a regenerative economy and believes that Alaska is in the process of emerging as a living lab where innovation, not fossil fuels, drives us forward, and that industrial hemp is the key to practical self-reliance, where food, energy, and zero-waste policies keep costs low and the quality of life high for generations to come. As the founder of the nonprofit Alliance for Reason and Knowledge, or ARC, Robert strives to convert public schools into experiential practicums, and that STEAM, or science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics, nurtures critical thinkers and lifelong learners. He believes mainstreaming the hemp industry in Alaska and regionally across the U.S. can save our farm feed and our families, which is why he is with me today. Welcome, Robert, to Cannabis Radio.
Hey, Vivian. Thanks for having me. Thanks for all the work you're doing.
Yeah, my pleasure. Right back at you, man. So, as we do this, we are still in an unfolding eco-tragedy as catastrophic wind-driven wildfires have decimated historic California neighborhoods and business districts. It's generally accepted that climate change will increasingly produce natural disasters worldwide. I want to dive into your various plans and projects, but kind of in this vein, how did you initially develop your sense of environmental awareness? What were the influences that formed your eco-consciousness?
Well, I think part of it was I spent my formative years in southern Indiana in the Clark State Forest. So I lived on an 88-acre plot of land in the middle of 180-acre state forest. So needless to say, I grew up surrounded by the woods and grew up playing with, you know, and being around critters, all types of stuff. And so that was the beginning of it. But, you know, in high school, it was really clear up here and everywhere that things were not going in a good direction. We were headed more towards 1984 and less towards Star Trek. And growing up on Star Trek, that's the direction I'd like to see us go in. It's not perfect either, but it's better than 1984 or us or any of the other visions of the future that we have been shown of the dystopia. So basically recognizing in high school that things were not going in the direction, I like either blow place up and start over, which it seems to be doing a pretty good job of itself sometimes. We got together with some friends. We're like, okay, we'll just leave. But for some reason, a bunch of high school kids couldn't get their stuff together to get off world. So it only left us with one option, is that was to save what we have. Or what I've come to realize with permaculture is not trying to save anything or change anything, but getting into the flow that things change rapidly and we need to be adaptable to that. And I'll give you one example. Here in Fairbanks on Tuesday, it was 52 above. Today, it's a recorded negative 21. So learning to adapt and change is a fundamental part of life. It's part of growth. And it's been basically instilled upon me my entire life that change is a constant and we can either be impacted by it or it can be part of our growth process. So it's the attitude I've adopted. And that's what led me to becoming a steward and to training other stewards. And this is essentially what a Lorax does, you know, teaching people that the environment and the economy don't have to be at war with each other and that we can have a high quality of life while maintaining a good stewardship for those who come after.
Your organization, ARC, Alliance for Reason and Knowledge, has a master plan titled Good Jobs for a Green World. What does that entail and how will it result in green jobs and a green world?
Well, So the regenerative economy, which we're trying to mainstream in the United States and Alaska by 2030 and the United States by 2050, is basically making this transition that instead of teaching people to do standard construction, do green construction. Instead of doing standard oil and gas, do green energy. But the Good Jobs for a Green World plan is based on a very simple notion that right now, our government, our society is spending about $100,000 a year to deal with an individual while they're in prison or while they're on the streets. So the Good Jobs plan basically puts forth the notion that why don't we put that money in them up front? If someone is struggling, why don't we put $100,000 into them not to address their issues and to help them get into a stable situation where they can not only take care of themselves, but they can be a functioning member of the community, because that's ultimately what we want to do. And we were fortunate to be able to connect with former NFL player Gary Gilliam. He has been advocating what's called the Milton Hershey model. And that's a company that makes Hershey's chocolate. And basically it started out with the novel idea that you take care of your people. And so he took over a school, or he bought an abandoned school in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and has converted it into, or is converting it into, a mixed use commercial development center, and using that as an opportunity to take people off the streets or marginalized citizens and not only provide them with job training, but the wraparound services that are necessary for these individuals to overcome their past and build a bright future. So the Good Jobs plan expands on that to look at attracting social impact private equity investment into underserved urban areas and building one of these mixed-use for-purpose projects in each state, and then using that as a catalyst within that region to foster micromanufacturing, job training, workforce development, largely in urban areas where we know people are going to be migrating to it over the next couple of years. So that's the essence of the plan. It's workforce development focused on green energy, but it serves a wraparound services and drives private equity investment into community infrastructure for capacity building around food, energy, and waste. So by the time we're done, hopefully communities will be able to provide for the food and the shelter needs of their citizens, just like they would on any spaceship. And here we live on spaceship Earth. We need to start thinking about it like that, at least it's my perspective.
You've said that the cannabis community can, quote, end apartheid by starting a food fight. What did you mean by that? And what apartheid are you referring to in that statement?
Well, apartheid is generally referred to as an intentional form of control by the elite against the poor. It's popularized by Nelson Mandela in Africa, but I don't think it ended in South Africa. It just went global. So this debt slavery that we have, these systems of control, these mechanisms of let's get people sick. I mean, we have a country where the biggest health opportunity are drugs to keep people from getting too fat, while we have two-thirds of the world that's starving. Our priorities are messed up. And it's because we've got into the system of consumption and the system of addiction and the system of, which is ultimately a system of control. And that's apartheid. So I was saddened to learn that HempFest wasn't able to continue, because extract the THC and you have an annual event that focused on community, that focused on empowerment, that focused on helping us be our best and making the best of what comes next. And that really needs to be preserved. Now, there's another national event that happens in October, the National Solar Tour. And basically, this is an opportunity. It's locally organized. So every state event is different, but it's all nationally shared and coordinated. So they've been building this momentum for like 30 years. And basically, in June, we now celebrate Juneteenth, and this is about ending slavery. And the biggest point of slavery we have right now is the chemicals that we put into our food, the artificial foods that we have, the monoculture industrial food system that just makes us all sick and makes more customers for our pharmaceutical industry. So the statement goes to that if the cannabis community were to focus on the community part of it, feeding each other, hosting events like that that brought community together and celebrating real food, supporting local CSAs, local food programs, regional development of industry, And you know, hemp has some elements that are actually edible, you know, for feeding livestock. I see all these environmental groups, Earth Day, and talking about how important it is to plant trees to CO2. Well, hemp's a much better solution for that. And I think that I think the cannabis community, one, is in the best position to separate the culture of cannabis from the practical and hugely beneficial industry of hemp.
Yeah, the hemp seed has a more complete protein complex than soybeans. We're going to go to a quick break and come back with Robert Shields.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We're back with Robert Shields. Robert, what's your concept of the regenerative economy? You kind of touched on it, but as it relates to micro city finance. In fact, what is micro city financing? How does that fit into the broader scheme of sustainability?
Well, that's a really loaded question here. I'll see if I can break it up. So in permaculture, there are principles that drive an economy. Exchange of goods, you know, maintaining profits, limiting waste. Basically, we exist now in an open looped system of rampant consumption. Our system is maintained because we have to consume more faster, and obviously this is unsustainable. So I actually refer to this now as an abacus economy. It's very rudimentary. It may have worked for us at one time, but it simply doesn't work for us anymore. It's like an abacus may have worked at one time, but now we have scientific calculators, but we have to use them. So in the abacus economy, we've got this cost and price and externalities. If they don't understand it, they externalize all the cost and internalize all the profits, whereas a regenerative economy externalizes the profits and internalize the costs. So when you invest in something, you see the long-term cost, you see the whole cost. They call it triple bottom line economics. Because when you do something, it has an impact on the environment. It can have a good impact or a bad impact, but that impact lasts usually longer than you're using the land. So those are kind of considerations. So the regenerative economy talks about decentralized energy system, decentralized governments, or decentralized governance, decentralized industrial complexes. Instead of having these huge monofarms, we have regional farms. Regional farms that serves regional needs. It's like here in Alaska, we have an opportunity to become practical sovereigns because we are so disconnected from everything else that there is good impetus for us to grow our own food, make our own energy, and we're getting a lot better at processing our waste and turning it into usable materials. So those are the kind of things that go into the regenerative economy and basically decentralizing authority, decentralized manufacturing reduces the environmental impact of industrial processes that allows us to maintain industrial level quality of life while minimizing and being good stewards to the environment. So that's basically what, you know, regenerative economics are. There's a lot of definitions out there. I encourage people to look it up. As far as micro city financing, so basically in Alaska, we build a lot of cabins. These are one room buildings. And as our families grow, we add another building onto it and add another building onto it. Before long, we have a little compound or a town. We design our towns this way. We design our cities this way. And the challenge is that as we've grown, we've introduced so many inefficiencies.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on the team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
The inefficiencies that are killing our budgets, that are making everything not work anymore. So the idea of microcities or district development is to look at these individual nodes where they're growing their own energy, where they're making their own food for their citizens, and where they're providing this reclamation of resources so there's no waste to deal with. And basically, microcity financing uses fiat currency, cryptocurrency, all of the above to help drive private equity investment into the capacity for communities to do this. Because right now, few of our communities have the ability to make much of anything. They can't grow their own food and they can't really produce their own energy. So those kind of things make us vulnerable And when they make us vulnerable, they make us stressed out. And then, you know, these the way we have stuff set up with jobs where people have to go thousands of miles to do dangerous work just to provide minimum wage, that's not working for anybody. And now with the introduction of AI, we're getting to the point where we're introducing the new merchant economy, where people don't have to work for someone else to make a living, that they can work directly with the community and become their own entrepreneurs. And all of these things allow us to move towards a more prosperous society. But you can't do it piecemeal. You can't do you can't replace the wheel one wheel at a time in a car. You do all four of them. So the idea of microcity financing is, instead of piecemealing the comprehensive economic development strategies of a city or their capital improvement plans, that you look at being able to bundle them together for efficiency and innovation, and then using innovation to drive markets rather than consumption. Does that help?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot.
How can domestic industrial hemp production and the utilization of industrial hemp usher in the mainstream adoption of a regenerative economy?
Largely, it has to do with the fact that we've gotten to the point where we have plastics in our genes, you know, and I'm not talking our blue jeans, but our DNA, it's showing up in our DNA. It's showing up in crazy places in our kids. And basically, if we hadn't illegalized hemp in the first place after World War II, we would be in a much better position. But hemp is just phenomenal in so many ways. And it's not just the manufacturing of it, but it's establishing the entire materials economy, from production to manufacturing to distribution to consumption to reclamation. It's establishing that regional economy base that allows the hemp industry, who can provide a plethora of materials, including, and most importantly at this time, housing material. We can be building a house. We could be building houses a lot faster if we were growing more hemp. I've got some friends that are working on tribes in North Dakota. They're 3D printing houses. So we're trying to get them some hempcrete grown in Minnesota for those 3D printed houses. So these things are reality. I'm sure your audience is well aware of the benefits of hempcrete being fire resistant. And so, yeah, we're looking at some of
carbon negative, from what I understand.
Yes, carbon negative. It sucks carbon out way faster than trees does. And it can be harvested three times, where trees can only be harvested like maybe once every 5 years. You know, and basically it consumes CO2 faster. It produces biomass faster. And we need a rapid response team. Cannabis has always been, or hemp has always been, on the front line of that. It's just the greed of industrialists pushed it aside because they couldn't figure out how to control it. Because of the weed.
And if the houses in LA had been made out of hempcrete, we would have a lot less devastation. I want to try to get, we only have 3 minutes till the next break. I want to get another question. You've said that your team is working to upgrade the coal-powered electrical grid with a decentralized network of renewables and foster the development of a downtown heated by geothermal and rooftop gardens, providing green spaces in the cold and dark. Unpack that. What is your team and how will that work?
Well, I am fortunate to be able to work through the internet from a small cabin here in Fairbanks, Alaska, with a group of international folks all over the country, including rocket scientists and climate scientists and stuff. And basically, we have been able to draw from other things that are going on to be able to replicate those things here. So in regards to the decentralized grid, I did a lot of my professional cutting my teeth in Portland, Oregon, which is a green mecca. And their energy generation system, unlike Alaska, which has a coal plant and they send the power out, they have a decentralized system where they have generators and renewables placed all over the city. And like with big box stores like Fred Meyer's, they work with them to draw those powers down where they need them. So having a decentralized system is just more resilient and more abundant, and produces a lot less waste because it's all generated and used on site. So you take that one step further in that while we have net metering, not all utilities are favorable to buying renewables. So when you want to get the full value of your power, what you have to do is you have to find ways to use that extra power that you would be generating on site. So that takes us to net zero buildings. Alaska's got a lot of geothermal. They had a downtown heating system at one point that was powered by a coal plant. And the technology has advanced to the point where we can drill geothermal wells in downtown and provide heat for many of the buildings instead of coal and natural gas, and then use that to supplement the other renewables to provide these net positive buildings. I actually just learned yesterday that there was a building in downtown Anchorage, a senior center, that actually had adopted a rooftop greenhouse for their residents. And obviously, you understand the health benefits of being in green spaces in the dark in the winter. But the idea was that you could make it a cost-effective model by, especially with a multi-story building, by tying those rooftop gardens into the water filtration and the air filtration systems of the building. So those are the types of things that we're trying to bring together in this systems approach, which takes us back to permaculture and the regenerative economy.
Wow. Impressive, man. All right, we're going to take another break, come back with our final segment with Robert Shields.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hem present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
Back to the final segment with Robert Shields. Robert, your bio says that as the son of a garbage collector from rural Indiana, Robert Shields, you understand the importance of treasuring our trash, which extends to the wasted potential of the incarcerated and infirm as a deficit of the human experience. How so?
Well, I think it's science has pretty much proven what results you get when you're kind to a plant. And if you're kind to a plant, imagine what kind of results you can get when you're kind to a person. Basically, I grew up very poor. And I reached adulthood because of the kindness of people who had no other motivation than they were the kindness in their hearts. And I believe that's the society that we are ultimately wanting to nurture. And basically, the opportunities that exist, like I said, with the Good Jobs Plan, it's designed towards filling those gaps in helping provide opportunities for the marginalized to be able to lift themselves and so we can lift each other up in order to be able to have more of a, work towards a Star Trek future instead of moving away from this dystopia future that we seem to be rampantly training for. But essentially, human potential is what... The Alliance for Reason and Knowledge isn't an environmental group. It's a fruit of the human potential movement. We recognize that when an individual is deprived of the opportunity to reach their potential, that's a deficit for the whole country. The whole premise of the Good Jobs Plan is that if we make these investments into critical thinkers and invest in our schools instead of our prisons and invest in innovation instead of military, that we will raise generations of critical thinkers that are able to solve the challenges that we have on this planet and lead us to figuring out how to solve the problems of becoming part of an intergalactic community. And I think those kind of motivations, those visions for a positive future is what we need to hold on to. And that's why we advocate Star Trek, is because how else do you show generations of people who have only known strife and suffering generations of peace and prosperity?
We're rapidly running out of time. Quickly, tell us about the Regenerative Planet Summit and Tour of Future Cities.
So we have been trying to organize here in Alaska, and we're trying to take it nationally, two events every year, spring with Earth Day, in the fall with the solar tours. In the spring, we're looking at the Regenerative Planet Summit, looking at all the things that go into how we can make a greener world. And like I said earlier, letting local groups coordinate those events and then advertising nationally. Same thing with the Tour of Future Cities. The solar tour started out with just solar, then they went to solar PV, then they expanded to solar greenhouses and EV cars. Last year, they were offering community gardens, and this is a steady progression towards green communities, living buildings, and ultimately future cities. So we're just trying to be part of that progression and bring things along and add competitions and other things to engage people that will ultimately drive investments into community resilience.
We have a little over a minute left. How can people follow your work, and what final thoughts would you like to leave us with?
Well, final thoughts is a lot of this work, it's like an iceberg. A lot of its things people don't see, you're not going to get credit for, and it's going to be a challenge. But even the poorest in this country have it better than some other people in other parts of the world. And if we don't take steps now to ensure our own resiliency and the resiliency of those around us, we're all going to suffer together. The opportunities presented to us over the next 4 years are everything's going to come down to the art of the deal. If you want to push an environmental or a social issue, you got to make an economic case for it. I think this provides a great opportunity for anyone who wants to make the world a better place, to build a business for it, and to make that work. So I encourage everybody to stay strong. And if you have dreams and ambitions about making the world a better place, don't let anybody tell you can't do it, because we are in the land of the free and the home of the brave.
And how can people follow your work and connect with you?
Sure. Our website for the Alliance is a-r-k.us. You can find me on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and other social media.
Give that again, in case somebody was grabbing a pencil.
Sure. So the website's a-r-k.us. That's the website for the Alliance for Reason and Knowledge. And I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn.
ARK.us with hyphens between the AR and the K.
Yes, sir.
All right. Very good. Robert, wow. You know, just what an impressive vision and your ability to dismantle it all and explain the dynamics of it is the mechanics is just very impressive stuff. What you're doing is so important. And I thank you for coming on the show and sharing it with us today.
Well, thank you for sharing the word. Good work to you too, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, man. Good luck with everything. The Hemp Bro, the Hemp Present intro music is 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand, and the outro music is Take Back the Plant by Stickerbush. You'd think I never said that before. See you next time, folks. Stay strong.